we're beginning on top of Ayin Aleph and Aleph. The Gemara here is discussing the end of the Mishnah from back on Samach Ten Amud Bet. We had a machlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai said, "Kol anashim meitot nidot." We have an assumption that any woman who passes away is a nida when she passes away. And therefore, we have to be makbil all the kelim that she's wearing or in contact with close to death. Whereas Beit Hillel says, "Ein nida elishim meita nida." If she's a nida, then we worry about it. We don't suppose that every woman that passes away is a nida. And here the Gemara discusses, "Maitamayu de Beit Shammai." What's the reasoning behind Beit Shammai, who seems to be the odd pshita over here, because Beit Hillel says, if you're a nida, we worry about it. If you're not a nida, we don't worry about it. Beit Shammai says, all women are nidot. Why would you say that? If you want to say, because of the pasuk in Esther, that the queen was shaken, she was caught off guard by the news that she received. Rav says that the meaning of Petit Chalchal HaMalka is that she's then had a menstrual sighting. Hachanami. So over here too, Agav Bi'ututa Demalacha Demavta Chazya. Maybe because of the fear of seeing the angel of death, that the same thing will happen, that we assume that that type of fear precipitates a menstrual sighting. And just like by Esther, that was the physiological reaction she had to that fear or that surprise. So too, the surprise or the fear of the Malach HaMavet will generate the same impact. Vanan Tanan. But we saw earlier in the Masechta, the Shita of Rabbi Meir, Shecharada Misalekat Adadamim. When a woman is fearful, then it causes the cessation, the restriction of the menstrual cycle, and she doesn't sight dam. We even said the possibility that if she came up to her Veset, that we wouldn't assume that she saw damim because of the charada, because of the fear that this woman was experiencing. When it says, Olokasha, pachto tzamit, bituta merafio. The fear is tzamit, causes constriction or cessation of the menstrual cycle. Bituta, shock or sudden fear, merafio, causes a loosening or a release of the menstrual cycle. So there's a difference between pachad and bituta. Pachad is a persistent fear. It is something that stays with the individual and plagues the individual. Bituta is a surprise. It's an unexpected type of fear or shock that happens, and they have a different physiological impact on the woman. Now, because of this, it's important to know that we don't assume that any woman who has a sudden shock or a sudden fear experience, then we have to worry about the fact that maybe she's pirsa nida and she has to check and be bodek, that we don't say, because we assume that the woman would be margisha, that she would have a sensation of having a sighting if that was associated with whatever transpired. So we assume that the woman did not have a sighting unless, together with that sudden fear or that sudden experience, she has a sensation that maybe something changed physiologically, and then she would have to do a check. But other than that, we would not assume that the woman had a sighting, even though here the Gemara sets up these physiological reactions to experiences that a woman might undergo. So now we're suggesting that the reasoning behind Beit Shammai is because of sudden shock and fear that causes the menstrual cycle to happen. Elahadatnan, the problem is that what we see, it's really the Tanya and Abraita, Beit Shammai omim, kol anashim mitim zavim. All men who die have a din like a zav. Beit Hillel omim, made zav, elamisha made zav. And Beit Hillel once again takes the position that only if you die as a zav, do you have the consideration or classification of Tumat Azav? So here, clearly, you can't say the same thing you'd say by the woman. You'd say, okay, Biututa de Malach HaMavet. The fear of the Malach HaMavet causes a Zav emission, and so that's why everybody is Tameh. That doesn't work here, because Ikre Khan Mibsaro Lo Machmat Onso. We already learned many times that the Zav emission cannot come from some other exogenous cause. It has to be the fact that it is a Zav emission. Over here, there's a precipitating incident that causes the Zav emission, which is the sighting of the Malach HaMavet. And given that, that's not considered to be a Zav emission, because you need Mibsaro. That's to come out of his flesh, below Machmat Onso, not from some other factor. So by a woman, onus is not a reason to say that you're not Tmeah. We've already learned that a woman has a sighting of Dam, whether it was Beonis, or whether it happened part of a natural cycle, doesn't matter, she is Tmeah. That is not true by Azav. The fact that Beit Shammai has the same position by a man, by Azav, as they do by Nida, shows you that that can't be the reasoning, because otherwise, By a Zav, they'd have a different opinion than they would have by a Nida. The fact that they have the same opinion means that that's clearly not the reasoning behind their position. El Tami de Beit Shammai. The reason behind Beit Shammai is Kedetanya Birishona. Hayu Matbilim Kelim Agave Nidot Metot. At first, they used to take all the Kelim of a Nida that had passed away, and they took them to the mikveh. Vayu Nidot Chayot Mitbaishot. And the women who were Nidot, who were alive, were embarrassed. Itkinu Shematbilim Akabe Kol Hanashim Nik Vodan Shal Nidot Chayot. So then they instituted that all women who passed away, that they would take the kelim to the mikveh, assuming or implying that they all were nidot, not that they really were, but because of the kavod of the niyot chayot, of the nidot that were still alive. We'll discuss in 1 second why that is. Rishona ayu matbilin agabe zavin meitin. Similarly, anytime a zav died, they would take all the kelim that he was in contact with prior to his death and take them to the mikveh. Zavin chayin mitbashin. And those that were zavin, that were alive, were embarrassed by this. Therefore, they changed the institution that for everyone that they would do this, because of those zavim that were alive. The truth is that it shouldn't be that they are embarrassed. The fact that they are a nida is already a given. And number two is probably something that was decently public in their day because of the issue of taharot. A woman who was a nida had to be in a separate area, a separate tent, a separate house, because of the tumah that was associated with her. And she had to change clothing because that clothing would become tumeah. And there was probably an easy way to see or understand that this woman was a nida, as opposed to a woman who was not a nida. Similarly, the zav would face those same issues, which is that if they were tumeim, they would need to separate away from all the other people, as well as interactions with food items, anything that was truma, kodesh, and so they would have the same issue, and it would probably be pretty public. So why is it that they're any more embarrassed now that they're taking care of this problem for the person that passed away versus the person alive is already identifiably a nida or identifiably a zav? Even if you say they're not identifiable, then it makes even less sense. Why would they be embarrassed if nobody knows that they're nida or a zav? So Rashi over here explains that is because they feel or they get the sensation shafilu b'mitatan e mishuni mikol adam, that a person who feels that they are an oddity or that they are somehow outside of the social norm, they want to know that there's a time that they're going to be released from this predicament or this isolation. And they want to know that there is some end to this and that they won't always be marked as someone who is segregated or someone who's outside. So if you see that at death, they still treat you differently because you were a nida or a zav, they think that we're never going to escape from this isolation, this segregation, this problem. They don't see any hope in the end. And that's why it embarrassed them, because they felt hopeless in their pursuit of tahara. And even though for a woman it's a cycle and she would become Torah again, but nevertheless, this tzad that would be, even in death, they would be delineated or marked as being somewhat segregated or different, was something that gave them angst and difficulty in the position that they found themselves in. And therefore, they instituted that they would equal the playing field and everybody would have their death treated like as if they died benida for women and as if they died bezav for men. So that way that there's no distinction. That comes to an important concept in general with regards to death that Rabbi Gamliel tried to institute and has carried through till today, which is that we try to not have any differentiation in death. That he wore simple cloak when he was dying because he didn't want the poor people to feel that they had to spend so much money or that the rich people had to adorn all their coffins. He wanted to make it that everybody was on the same footing when they died, which is al tirak yashirish kirbe kavod beito. At death, none of this goes with you. It doesn't make a difference. They were having problems that they were abandoning the mate because it was too expensive. The debt load for someone who had to bury a mate when you had to dress them up and you had to get a fancy this or a fancy that. So that caused huge problems, both economic problems for those that were left behind, as well as the problem of covering a mate for those that had passed away. So again, Rabbi Gamliel, who was a nasi, said that he must be buried in the simple clothing, so that he set the standard that everybody's buried in the same way or the same fashion. And that equalizer is important. And I think the same thing that's said here, which is that in death, we're making everyone equal. You can't have distinctions in death. Once a person passes away, everyone's on equal footing. We treat everybody in a similar fashion. Even over here, it's for kovod ha-chayim. Nevertheless, it's also an issue for the meitim that they all should be treated on equal footing. The Balei HaTosafot discuss over here that it's a little bit difficult to understand how Beit Shammai becomes the standard over here. In general, we have a position that Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, halacha k'Beit Hillel. So how could it be here that we have a shita, that is Beit Shammai shita, that really is taken halacha? So the Rabbeinu Tam has a chiddush here as to what the argument between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is about, that it's about the ratio of the Mishnah, which we've already forgotten, but the ratio of the Mishnah spoke about Eben Misma, and that special type of Tuma. And he says that's the place that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argued. But Beit Hillel agrees to this position of Beit Shammai, and that way he solves the problem by saying that even Beit Hillel agrees to this concept of Bishona, that in the beginning they used to do this, and then they changed it, and even Beit Hillel agrees, that way it's not a halacha to Beit Shammai, but rather Beit Hillel also agrees to what we just said. Alright, next Mishnah, Aisha Shemeta, Yatsa Mimena Revi'at Dam. A woman who passed away, and then discharges a Revi'at of Dam. Mitama mishum ketem, she is mitama because of a stain. Really, it should be a sighting, because as we know, a ketem has to be a minimum of a kegris. And so we're probably not speaking about a ketem in the sense of a stain on clothing. We're talking about here a discharge of dam. And that's probably evidenced also by the fact that Rashi over here and the Balei HaTosafot say that you don't need a revi'at dam here. For nida, you can even have a mashul. So that shows you that we're not speaking about tamim, which have a minimum shiur. We're speaking about a sighting of dam for a nida, which has no minimum shiur. Umitama be'ohel. And it's also mitama be'ohel. What you see here in the Tanakama is that he is either uncertain, or maybe he is certain, that the dam that you're seeing here is both dam amet and dam anida. And therefore, the woman is considered to be a nidah, which is meaningless at this point because she's passed away. But the dam that discharged from her is dam nidah, which does have impact. We've seen that earlier, that dam nidah has a din of avatuma. It's a very high level of tuma. And the fact that it's mitama ba'ohel means that it's from dam from a mate. Revi'at dam from a mate causes tuma to ohel. If you don't mer, enu mitama mishum ketem, mitnevei shenekar mishemeta. You have to take a position, Rav Yehuda says. Either the discharge happened when she was alive, or the discharge happened after she passed away. Now, he takes the position that it happened after she passed away. So therefore, since the discharge happened after she passed away, it's certainly not dam nida, but it is dam hamet. And therefore, he says it's mitama bo'el, but it's not mitama mishum ketem. Umode Rav Yehuda, biyoshevet al hamashber. Rav Yehuda agrees that if the woman is in the process of birthing, umeta, and she dies in childbirth, and she has a discharge of dam, and it seems from here that Rav Yehuda again is taking a position that is dam nida and not dam meta, because he only says that she is mitama mishum ketem because of nida, not because of dam oil. So in the case of a regular woman who passes away and has the discharge, he assumes that the discharge happened after death and it's dam of a mate. On the other hand, if it happens during childbirth, where there's already huge exposure, blood that's flowing already, the assumption is that the blood exited prior to the death of the woman, and therefore it's dam nida and not dam hamet. Amar Rav Yossi, lefikach, ina mitama boel. Obviously, he is stating what seems to be the case according to Rav Yehuda, which is that if you say it's mitama mishum ketem, then it's not mitama mishum ohel. So, Michlau, Mar says, based on what we see from Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, the Tanakama Savar, Apagav the Nekar, Dam Mishemeta, Mitama Mishum Ketem. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, I think that the blood came out after she died, and therefore it's Dam Amet, not Dam Nida. The Tanakama says it's both Dam Nida and Dam Amet. The implications of that are that, in the case of Rabbi Yehuda, which means it was discharged after death, he still thinks that it hasn't done it Tumat Nida. Why would you ever say that? That's a woman could be a nida after she's already passed away. So Amar Ziri, Mekor, Mekomot Tamei, Ike Benayu. The machloki between them is not in whether the woman is a nida or not. She's certainly not a nida. The dam that exited after she passed away. Therefore, the blood is mitama be'ohel. That's both according to the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. Why does the Tanakhama then say that the dam has a din of dam nita? That's because it exited from the uterus. And Mekor has a din of tuma. This is something that we discussed earlier in the Masechta, again, a number of times, which is that a discharge from the uterus for the woman makes her into a nida. There might be a secondary problem, which is any dam that exits from the uterus. Whether it makes the woman into a nida or not, that dam still might be tamei because it was in the uterus. And the uterus itself might make any dam that's found inside of it tamei, unless the Torah indicates otherwise, by the dam toar of a lay da. But otherwise, dam that exits from the uterus is tamei. And that's what the machloket is about here. The woman is clearly not a nida. The dam is also probably not dam nida either. It's dam that came from the uterus, which means that it has a din of avatuma. That makes anything that it comes into contact with into a rishon l'tuma. That's dam ha-mikor, which is tamei. So now, Moder Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda agrees by the case of birthing. And Rabbi Yossi adds that it's not mitame be'ohel. Miklal the Tanakama savar be'ohel nami mitame. That means that the Tanakama referencing to Rabbi Yehuda believes in that is situation that it's also mitame be'ohel. Am Rabbi Yehuda dam tvusa ikabenayu. The machloka between them is about dam tvusa, where Rabbi Yehuda is choshesh for a revi'at dam lachar mita, whereas Rabbi Yossi is not choshesh for that because in all likelihood it came from when she was alive because she was yoshevet ala mashber. Dam tvusa is something that we bumped into earlier in the Masechta. It is tumat hamet with regards to dam midrabanan. And it comes from the terminology that's used in Yechezkel that we're familiar with from the Haggadah on the night of Pesach, as well as from a Brit Milah, which is Vat mitbosseset bedamayich. So the word mitbosseset means that you are wallowing, dirtied, muddied with dam, and that's the same thing over here. Dam tvusa is dam that's mixed up. That is not just simply dam hamet. There's other things that are mixed in with it, and we'll have to understand what it is. Here the Gemara is going to bring a number of opinions as to what this dam tvusa is. That is problematic midrabanan, d'tanya. Ezo dam tvusa. What is considered to be dam tvusa? Perish Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yehuda, harug, someone who was murdered, killed. Sheyatzah mimenu dam, ben bechayav, ben bemoto. The person was bleeding because he was killed, murdered. The blood that exited partly was from the wound, and then later on became the dam of death. We're not sure the dam that exited was the dam from a wound or was the dam from post his death. Safek bechayav yatsa, safek bemoto yatsa. We don't know if it left his body when he was alive or left his body when he already passed away. Safek bechayav ubemoto. Or maybe it's a mixture of both. Dam that left when he was alive and dam that left after he had passed away. Zeu dam tvusa. That's called dam tvusa according to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehuda. Chachamim omrim, the chachamim say, no, no, no. Because that is a classic safek deoraita. In this case, there's a possibility that the entire revi'at dam came after he had passed away. Or the entire revi'at dam came before he passed away. Or maybe there's a mixture of both. The fact that you have a safek here as to the possibility that the entire revi'at dam happened after death, that's a classic safek deoraita. Deoraita, revi'at dam is metameh b'magah b'masah b'ohel. And you have here a possibility of a revi'at dam from the mita. If that's the case, b'shuta yachid sfeko tameh, it follows the normal parameters of Safek Tuma Doraita, which is if it is in Rishut Yachid, Sveiko Tamei, we assume it is Tamei, Rishut Rabim, if it's out in the public, Torupair, Sveiko Tahor. Then the Safek is Tahor, that we've discussed also in the past, that's learned from the Din of Sota, the fact that only when it's in a private area or a secluded area is it classified as a Safek that we consider Tamei, whereas if it's in a public venue, it is not considered to be Sveiko Tamei, but rather it's Sveiko Tahor. So that's what the Chachamim say. That's not called Dam Tvusa. Ela Ezu Dam Tvusa. So then what is this Dam Tvusa that we're speaking about? Harug She Yatsa Mimenu Revi Dam Bechayav Ubimoto. It's a Harug who had blood that exited both while he was alive and he passed away. So we clearly have a mixture of Dam, some of it from when he was alive, some of it after he passed away. Badayin Lo Pasak. And it has yet to stop exiting the mate. We'll have to discuss why that's a relevant statement. The Baal Yad Tosafot have three different explanations speculating as to why this is important. Safek rubo bechayav umyuto bemoto. So safek is whether the majority exited while he was alive, and the minority after he passed away. Safek mu'uto bechayav rubo memoto. Or the other way around, maybe a minority came out while he was alive, and the majority exited when he had already passed away. Zeu dam tvusa. That is dam tvusa, because for the Chachamim, there is no revi'at dam that came out during the mitah. The revi'at dam is comprised of both a mixture of when he was alive and when he had passed away. It's a combination of the two of them. That's why it's not your classic safek, because here you don't have a revi'at dam after death, or you don't have the possibility of a revi'at dam after death. As Rashi explains over here, it's important. Rashi, the pshitalan, the lo nafik minei revi'at shlema lachar mita, as I just explained, it's clear here that there was no revi'at dam that came out after mita. The afagav the misfekalan, iruba mechayim, we don't know if a robe came out while he was alive. Nevertheless, they gozer aleha tum'ah. They made a gzerah that it should have a din of tum'ah. Mio, you have a nami ruba lachar mita. Even if the majority exited after mita, ain't tumato min haTorah. Rashi says there is never a din Torah over here because there isn't a revi'at dam achar mita. Since there is no revi'at dam achar mita, there will never be a din Doraita of tuma. There's only a din Dorabonon of tuma. Had it been that the robe was after he died, then we could understand why the Chachamim would say that that has a din tuma midrabanan, because it almost looks like a revi'at dam that came out after death. On the other hand, if only a minority came out when he passed away, there you would have assumed that it has no tumah. That's where the Chachamim came and instituted that even though Rubo came out Michaim, they were gozer alei tumah. If we knew for certain that a robe came out from Chaim, lo gozer alei. They wouldn't be gozer. So Rashi breaks this down into different scenarios. The scenario where we know for certain robe came out Michaim, there is no tumah to derabonon, there is no dam tvusa. The case where we have dam tvusa is where we're uncertain as to whether the robe came out Mechaim or the robe came out in the Mitah. If the robe came out in the Mitah, then it would make sense that the Chachamim would make it Temeh, because it almost looks like the Din Doraita. If a majority came out Mechaim, you would have thought not to have a Gzerah. That's Dam Tzvusa, which is the Gzerat Chachamim, that has Tumah. Now, it never will be Tumah Doraita, because there isn't a Revi'at Dam Akar Mitah. So that's what Rashi clarifies about this Dam Tzvusa. Now we have to understand why it was important in the case that said, Vadayin lo pasak. You can see in the Balei Tosafot here, Haki Gar Sinan, Beperish Rabbeinu Chananu, Betosefta Do'olot, Harug. Sheyatzah mimenu revi'at dam, Bechayav, Umumoto, Adayin lo pasak. So he sees that that kirsa of Adayin lo pasak is there. And now he says, Rabbeinu Shmuel Katav, Deloi Parish. I have no idea what it means, Adayin lo pasak. So the Rishbam says, that word isn't meaningful in the case. Why do you need Adayin lo pasak? That's not relevant to the case. Mufarish Ri, the Ri explains, Adayin lo pasak adam mishemet. After he passed away, the dam is still dripping or pouring out. B'shema holech braba ad shivi revit shleima. That's the whole chashash over here, is maybe at some point that the dam will add up to a revit after mitah. And that's the whole point of this institution, midrabanan. According to Rashi, you can never get to tumah doraita because you can never reach a revit dam achar mitah. The Ri says that the whole idea of dam tvusa is the risk that if it continues to flow out afterwards, that that would reach a revi'at dam, and you would reach a doraita issue. And that's why he says vadayin lo pasak is important. That's the Ri who says then, if we see shepasak mishemet, lo gazru alav. If once he died, they stop having a flow of dam, there is no din of dam tvusa, because there'll never be a revi'at dam achar mita. So he disagrees with Rashi. Rashi says there's never a revi'at dam. That's when dam tvusa exists. The Ri says that's not true. Only if you could possibly reach revi'at dam doraita is there dam tvusa. And that's from this word of adayin lo pasak. That's the view of the Ri. Barav, Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbeinu Yom Tov, Mifaresh. Here's the second suggestion of Tosafot as to what the reason of adayin lo pasak is. Perush, the Yot Shotet. It didn't stop dripping or flowing out. Because Eloi emitafteif, because if it was dripping, hayat tahor, it would be tahor. So he's explaining something based on the next couple of lines we're going to see in the Gemara, which is, if the mate passes away and there's dam flowing out in a constant stream, then it's not batel to the dam that's already come out. On the other hand, if the dam is dripping out of the mate, and there's a pool of blood that's already there that was michaim, then as each drop comes out of the mate, it's batel in the pool that's already there. It's kama kama botil. It's a concept that we have in Bittul, that if you have a small amount that drops into a large amount, each small amount as it comes in is batel. There is a question as to then, is there a chazar v'ne'or? Can it be reawakened once you reach a certain quantity of the drips? But over here we're not addressing that issue, but he's suggesting that that is the reason why it says a dain lo pasak. A dain lo pasak is not about the cumulative amount that's going out, it's the manner by which it's coming out. It's coming out in a flow, not in drips, because if it came out in drips, there'd be nothing to discuss, because it'd all be batel. It's only because it's coming out in a flow that it makes a difference. That's the explanation of the Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Rabbeinu Yom Tov. And then Tosafot of brings a third explanation, which is Rabbeinu Tam Mifarish. Rabbeinu Tam says, V'adayin lo pasach, shachar shenodan lanu shemeit, after we know that he clearly passed away, Re'inu shalo pasach, we see that there's still dam flowing out, ubadai ika miut achar mita. And therefore we know for certain that there is a miut that came out after mita. So the Adayin lo pasach gives us that tzad, that there is definitely dam mita over here. That's what it means, Adayin lo pasach. Adayin lo pasach doesn't mean it's still going now. It means that once he died, we saw that the dam still flowed. So there's at least some dam mita that's mixed in over here. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says the meaning of Adayin lo pasach is. So you have three different views as to what the meaning of Adayin lo pasach is. It seems that Rashi either didn't have that girsa, or disagrees, because Rashi seems to say that you never will reach a via dam of mita. That could be explained by the latter two positions that Tosafot takes, but nevertheless, Rashi never addresses this idea of adayin lo pasach. He never says what the meaning of that is, or how it is relevant to the case. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda tells us, Arug, she yatsa mimenu via dam, someone who was killed, had a via dam that exited for him, v'ya mutal b'mita, and he was laying on a bed, a deathbed, and the blood is dripping from the bed into basically a drainage line that's there. But the drainage line already has pooled blood in it from the blood that exited while he was still alive. So there's a pool of blood that's there from when he's still alive. And then there's blood now dripping after he has passed away from the bed into this guma. That dam is tamei because there's definitely dam of mita that is mixed in with it. The chachamim say that's not the case because it is tohor. Mipnei shirishon rishon nifsak, because each of the first things stopped. Now this is the same concept as kama kama batil, which is that as each drop goes in, it is batel. They're just expressing it as to why that happens. That happens because the dam didn't flow in a stream. The blood is dripping from the bed down into the guma. The guma has, in the drainage line, you have blood that was already there from when he was alive. Then you have blood dripping from after death into there. As each drop goes in there, it is batel. And kama kama batel, because it's not flowing, but rather dripping. So the Gemara says, Shapir kamerle Rabbanan the Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbanan have a strong position here against Rabbi Yehuda, because what is Rabbi Yehuda going to say? They say kama kama batel. Why does Rabbi Yehuda disagree? Rabbi Yehuda letamei, Rabbi Yehuda is l'shitato. We've seen Rabbi Yehuda numerous times throughout Shas, a lot of times in Kodoshim, in Zvachim, in Menachot. We saw it in Psachim, saw it in Chulin, that he believes, ein dam mevatel dam. Dam is not mevatel dam. The source for his position is the par and sa'ir of Yom HaKippurim, whereby the Kohen Gadol mixes the par and the sa'ir's blood in the end to do the spinal matnot dam on the Mizbeach Zahav. And there it says in the Torah, "Velakach mi dam apar mi dam haseir." Even after they're mixed, it says you're taking the dam apar and the dam haseir. And even though the quantity of dam apar far exceeds that of the dam haseir, and it should be batel. Why is it still called dam haseir? Because ain dam mevatel dam. Dam is not able to be mevatel dam. But that's what Yehuda's shita, and it has implications in many different areas of halacha, which is premised on the basic idea that min bimino. Enu batel. When you have something of the same min, it's not batel. And similarly, by dam, ein dam mevatel dam, that has implications beyond min bimino, because it also has implications in terms of putting dam on the mizbeach. So that's why Rabbi Yehuda disagrees here, because even though it's dripping down, and you would have said kama kama batel, this is an exception to the rule, because dam is not mevatel dam, min bimino is enu batel, and therefore, the dam that's the mita is still extant. In this pool of blood that's alive, it's still extant. Since it's extant, it isn't batel. Rabbi Shimon Omer, so Rabbi Shimon speaks about very interestingly, an experience or something that they're seeing at the time of the Tanaim, which is obviously the Roman rule, which is tzaluv ala eitz. The term tzaluv in the Torah and in Aramaic is used to mean hanged. If you look by Paro and the Sar Mashkim and the Sar Ofim, it says there when the Sar Ofim was hanged. That Sar Ofim tala kasher patar et Yosef. The Aramaic translation is that the Yad Rav Nachtumei Tzalav Kamadi Pashar Lohon Yosef. The word Tzalav in Aramaic is used in the Torah to be a translation for hanged. On the other hand, here in the Mishnah, the term Tzaluv is clearly referencing to being crucified. And this is a Roman punishment, had nothing to do with any religious belief or any religion. It happens to be that the religion is premised on an individual who was crucified in the same way that every Roman political adversary, criminals, or people that they wanted to rid themselves of, rebellious, problematic individuals, were all crucified. That means that they were nailed up onto a piece of wood, and then they were let to die. It was a very difficult and elongated death. And now Rabbi Shimon explains part of the death involves the bleeding of the individual. The person doesn't die from the wound or the injury. They die from the loss of blood or from dehydration. A person with tzaluv ala eitz, they're crucified up on a tree, up on a piece of wood. Shedamo shotet laaretz. The blood is dripping down. It's really flowing, not dripping down. They're bleeding to death. If you find a pool of revi'id dam down below, it is tamei. Rabbi Yehuda mitaher. Surprisingly, Rabbi Yehuda says it is tor. Shani omer tipasho mita umedet lo al gabe eitz. Because Rabbi Yehuda says that the dam ha-mita, or the blood from the mita, is still stuck or dried on the wood or on the tree. It isn't in the pool down below. So Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda neima Yehuda nafshei. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say to himself, like he said in the previous Braita that we brought, in the previous Braita, we said that he argued on the Chachamim and said that the dripping blood from the bed came down into the pool below and wasn't Patel. So you have Dam Mita Murabbo. Shani Omer Tipasho Mita Omeret Agava Mita. And I say that the blood that was there was in the Mita and then drips down into the pool below. Why over here does he say, oh, the Dam stays on the tree or on the wood and doesn't come down to the pool below? My says, Shani Mita. Mita is very different. De mechalchala. So this is the same term that we saw by Esther, but the meaning of the word mechalchala means it's seeping or it percolates. And that's why the Gemara before said, why does it say when Esther was in shock or Esther was in fear of what the news that she had received, why did they interpret it to mean that she was pirsa nida? That's because mechalchala means to seep down, to drip down, to percolate. Dam from the mate that's on the bed will slowly seep through the bed and drip down into the guma, the sewage line below. That's not true when you're on a tree or you're on a piece of wood. It's very possible that the blood will stay there and dry on there because it's a hard substance. It's not something that, by definition, is porous or allows the blood to flow through. Next Mishnah. Rishona ayu omrim. Ayushevet al dam tohor. So this is a woman who is yoledet, and after 7 days of tumah for zakar, or 14 days for a nekeva, she then has her yemei tohar. Yemei tohar for a zakar would be then additional 33 days of yemei tohar, or for a female it would be 66 days. Hayta me'ara mayim lepesach. Such a woman can't pour the water for the Pesach. It's very unclear what this has to do with the Pesach at all, or why she's pouring water for the Pesach. The way that Rashi explains it over here is that Mara Mayim LePesach is that she's pouring water from the kli that she has it in into another kli, but not directly onto the Korban HaPesach. The water is going to be used for the washing of the Pesach before they roast it, either to clean it or make it easier to flay afterwards. For whatever reason, they were going to pour water on top of it. So she's preparing that water. She can't pour the water directly onto the Pesach, but she can't pour it from one kli to another kli and not affect that water, even though it's going to be used for kodashim. That's one possibility. The Bali HaTosafot here speak about the possibility that she's pouring it directly onto the Korban HaPesach and not pouring it into another utensil. Others say that it's the water that's going to be used to make the matzot that are going to be eaten together with the Korban HaPesach. Either way, the problem that we have here is a woman who is bearing her Yemei Tohar from Leidah, is what's called a Tzvulat Yom Aruka. She is as if she went to the mikveh and is waiting for a sunset. A typical person who is Tamei, whether they're Tamei for 7 days or whether they're Tamei for 1 day, when it comes to the going to the mikveh, they go during the day on the final day of their Tumat. One day of Tumat on that day itself, like for Keri, Shechvat Zera, for Zav, Zavah Gedola, Zavah Ktana, for all those Mitzorah, all those Tumot, you go to the mikveh on the final day, the 7th day of your Shemini Nikiyim, and then when the sun sets on that day, you're now completely Tahor. The time period between the time you go to the mikveh and the sun sets, you're called a Tvul Yom. So for a woman who gave birth, that period of Tvul Yom is very extended. That is because after her 7 days of Tumah, she goes to the mikveh. After her 14 days of Tumah, she goes to the mikveh. The sun setting that will make her Tahor does not happen for a male until the 40th day. The sun sets then she becomes fully Tahor. Or for a female on the 80th day. That's when she becomes Tahorah. That's because she is what's called a Tvulat Yom Aruch. She is gone to the mikveh, but she's waiting for the sun to set. So in the interim period, she's classified like a Tum'ah of a Tvul Yom. That Tum'ah makes it that she's not allowed to partake in Kodoshim. She's not allowed to enter into the Mikdash. And she's also a Sheni L'Tum'ah, which would impact on Trumah. She's not allowed to eat Trumah. That's the first Mishnah that we're going to bump into when we start Shas again in Brachot, which is Ematai Korim Et Hashlamah, is Misha Shekohanim Nechtasim Lechol B'Tumatan. When do they come in? They come in when the sun sets, or Tzeit HaKochavim, depending on your opinion. That's when they become Tahor to eat Trumah. Because until then, they are a Tvul Yom. You need Harav Shemesh in order to eat Trumah. So what's being said about this woman is that she's a Tzvulat Yom Aruch, and despite the fact that she's a Tzvulat Yom Aruch, we're allowing her to work with the Mayim, with the water that's going to be used to process the Korban HaPesach. Now, Rashi explains, according to the Tanakhama, it'll become apparent in the Gemara, that the assumption here is that they're doing this al Tarat HaKodesh. Even though the water is Chulin, they're holding it to the standard of Kodesh because it's going to go on the Korban Pesach in the end. It's going to be used for Kodesh in the end. Or similarly, if it's to make the matzot, it's going to be the matzot that are eaten together with the Korban Pesach. So since in the end it's going to be associated with Kodesh, they are keeping Chulin al Tarat HaKodesh. Now that they're keeping Chulin al Tarat HaKodesh, despite that fact, this woman's allowed to be pouring the water. That is because she is a Tvulat Yom. Tvulat Yom is a Sheni L'Tumah. And the water is in a kli. She cannot be mitamei the kli, because a kli needs at least an abba tumah to make it into a rishon the tumah. Because of that, there's no problem with her touching the kli and pouring the water into another kli. Or maybe even possibly pouring the water directly on the Korban HaPesach. That's a machloket in the rishonim as to whether we worry about that. Was that a little too far because it's too risky for her to be involved with the Korban HaPesach? Chazrul Omar, then they changed their mind to say, barik and maga, Tamemate, the Kodoshim. She is the equivalent of a person who comes into contact with someone who's Tamemate. Someone who's Tamemate is a Rishon the Tumah. The mate is an Avia Bota Tumah. Someone who comes into contact with the mate is an Ava Tumah. They then will make someone into a Rishon the Tumah. So we're talking about the fact that she is classified like a Rishon the Tumah, the Kodoshim. But that's only true by Kodoshim Kedivrei Beit Hillel. That's like the view of Beit Hillel. It's Shemai Omeim, Af Ketamei Meit. Not only is she a Rishon L'Tumah, she's an Ava Tumah. But they both agree, seemingly, that this is only relevant by Kodoshim, which implies, and again Rashi says this, it's become apparent in the Gemara, that this half of the Mishnah thinks that Chulin, Shenasu, Atarat HaKodesh, are not Kodesh. And therefore, only in the world of Kodesh is impactful that she's a Rishon L'Tumah going to Beit Hillel, or an Ava Tumah going to Beit Shammai. Within the world of Chulin, even Chulin Shenasu Atarat HaKodesh, it has no bearing, and therefore she can be involved without any problem. She could even be Me'areh, the water, directly on the Pesach, or maybe even come into contact with the water without causing a problem. So now Gemara is Midayek, what we already explained in the Mishnah, which is Me'arah in Nogat Lo. In the first half of the Mishnah, she's allowed to pour the water, she's not allowed to touch the water. Alma, from this we conclude that Chulin, Shenasu, Atarat HaKodesh, Kikodesh Damu. As we explained in the first half of the Mishnah, the water which is Chulin is being treated at the level of Kodesh. Therefore, she can't come into direct contact with the water, because she would ruin that water, even though it's clean water. She can't be in contact with the water indirectly through a kli, because there she doesn't have any impact. Ema seifa. What do you do with the latter half of the Mishnah? It says, Chazru lomar, harihi kemaga, tamemet, lekodoshim. She has a din of coming into contact with someone who is in contact with the mate, which means she's a rishon l'tuma, for kodoshim. And the deal they want to make is l'kodoshim in the chulin lo. That's true for kodoshim, that's not true by chulin. Alma. So again, here you would conclude, chulin shenasu atarata kodesh, lav kekadosh tami. They would conclude that chulin that were done atarata kodesh do not have a din like kodesh, because over here you're treating the chulin water as if it's no problem. She only has an issue with regards to kodeshim. She does not have an issue with regards to chulin shenasu atarata kodesh. That contradiction can be explained by the fact that they changed their mind. Chazru lomar. There was a change in their conception of chulin shenasu atarata kodesh, and that's why there's a different din in the reisha than there is in the seifa. And now we want to understand who is the author of this position in the seifa that says that Maim of Kodesh, that's touched by Shein Tuma, has an elevated status of a Rishon Tuma. And Gemara says, Matnitin Mani, who is the author of our Mishnah that has such an opinion, who believes that Kodesh is elevated to the Rishon Tuma? Abba Sholi. That is Abba Shaul, the Tanya. We have a bright Abba Shaul Omer, Tvuyom Tchila LeKodesh, LeTamei Shnayim, B'Liv Sol Echad. That Abba Shaul is of the opinion that a Tvuyom is a din like a Rishon Tuma, like Beit Hillel in our Mishnah, but that's only true by Kodesh. Because by Kodesh, Kodesh goes down all the way to a Revi'i Lituma. And you know that the word Tamei in the world of Tuma means, not only are you Tamei, but you can convey Tuma. Pasul means that you can receive Tuma, but you cannot convey Tuma. So therefore, the standing over here is that if she is a Rishon Tuma, then she can be Mitamei two levels. She'll make a Rishon into a Sheni. That Sheni, both in receipt of Tumah and can convey Tumah. That Sheni will make a Shlishi the Tumah. That Shlishi, again, is in receipt of Tumah and can convey Tumah, which will then make a Revi'it the Tumah. That Revi'it the Tumah only receives Tumah, does not convey Tumah, because that's the end of the line of Tumah. That's what it means here. You have two levels of Tumah. One level of Psul, because she is classified as a Rishon the Tumah. This Tvulat Yom may be true as a Tvul Yom as well, but that's only the Gabei Kodoshim, not the Gabei Chulin, or not the Gabei Chulin, Shinasu Atarata Kodesh. The second half of the Mishnah that has that position is authored by Abba Shaul, has such a position that something that was touched by Shein Tuma that's in Kodesh, Naset Tchila, becomes like a Rishon Tuma, the Gabei Kodesh. So the conclusion of the Gemara seems to be that Chulin Shinasu Atarata Kodesh doesn't have these issues of Shein of the Tuma making it into an elevated status of Tuma as if nothing happened. Although the Gra over here disagrees with the vast majority of Rishonim and Akronim and says that the Gemara still would not allow you to pour something from a Kli onto a Korban Pesach directly, even though Chulin Shenasu Atarat HaKodesh don't have a din of Kodesh, and that is the conclusion of the Gemara. That's only when you're dealing with Stam Chulin. But when you're dealing with chulin that are going to interact with Kodesh itself, over there they still have that elevated status, and there we are Choshesh for Tuma, and there we would not allow you to interact because of the Chashash, that maybe you will touch the liquids, will then make the Kli Tamei, and then the Kli will make the liquids Tamei, and it'll be a problem for the Korban HaPesach, for any Kodeshim that you're interacting with. Alright, so now the next Mishnah says, Umodim, Shehi Ochelet B'maser. It's really not the next mission. It's really a continuation of the previous mission. They should be together. The Gemara just breaks it up in order to explain each one individually. But this Tvulat Yom can eat Maser. The reason being is that Maser is Chulin. Any Tvul Yom can eat Maser, because Maser is Chulin. A Tvul Yom has a din of a Sheni L'Tuma. That's the end of the line of Tuma in Chulin. So therefore, they can eat Maser. They can't eat Truma, because Truma goes down to a Shlishi, the Truma. And therefore, a Tvul Yom is restricted in Truma. And that's again the Mishnah in Brachot, that when can the Kohanim eat their Truma is only after they have Harif Shemesh, only after the day is complete, and now they are fully Tahor, can they partake in the Truma. In addition to that, Kotza La Chala, she can't take off Chala. Now that's difficult, because Chala has the same din as Truma. Chala is a form of Truma for dough that you are kneading. So how is it that she's kotzeh chala? Umakefet v'kora l'shem. she puts it adjacent to the dough that she's working with and calls it challah. So now, how she does that is by taking the dough that is chulin. Dough that's chulin is not affected by her because she's a sheni l'tuma. So she can continue to knead the dough. When it comes time to separate away the challah, she separates away the challah and puts it into a kli. So now, again, nothing has happened that makes it tameh because everything's still chulin. At the moment after she puts it into the kli, she puts the kli adjacent to the remainder of the dough and says that which is in the kli is now challah. So she declares it challah at that point. She's no longer in contact with that dough that is challah, that is tuma, because it's in a kli. And when she goes to pick up the challah, she picks it up in the kli. She's a sheni the tuma. She has no impact on the kli, and therefore she can be mafrish challah, even though she is a tbulat yom, because she can do it in a manner by which the challah will become challah without her being in contact with it, without her touching it directly. Vim nafal miroka umidam tahara. If some of her saliva or spit or the dam of toar that she is discharging falls ala kikar shel truma, falls onto a loaf of bread of truma, shehu tahor, that is considered to be tahor, because the discharge of this woman that's a tbulat yom is not like the discharge of a nida. It's not like the discharge of a woman who is tmeya, which has a high level of tuma. This is a discharge from a woman that's a tbulat yom, and therefore it does not have any tumah that's going to be problematic, because she's such a low level of tumah, the liquids that are discharged or exuded by her are even a lower form of tumah, or really not tameh at all, because in chulin there's nothing past the sheni the tumah. So the fact that she has something that is discharged by her that would have tumah a level below her, there is no level below her. Beit Shammai omrim tzvichat tvila v'achrona. This is a machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai with regards to on the 80th day, when she is then going to have her hair of Shemesh on the 80th day. On the 40th day, does she also need to go to the mikveh in order to be tahor? Beit Shammai says she needs a tvila ba'achrona. She needs to go to the mikveh then. As Rashi says, on the night after the 80th day, she goes to the mikveh for truma, because that's what she's going to become permitted in. Until she brings her korbanot on the 81st day or on the 41st day, she will not be permitted to enter the mikdash or eat kodoshim. But once the sun sets on the 80th day or the 40th day, she will be permitted in truma. So Beit Shammai says she's got to go to the mikveh before she's permitted in truma, because hisicha da'ata mi'atruma. It's been so long since she's been permitted in truma. Even when she went to the mikveh after day 14 or after day 7, she's already forgotten about that. She wasn't so careful about that. She needs to do a new mikveh in order to be on par with tarat ha'truma, because the mikveh she went to so earlier has already faded into her memory. She hasn't had any consciousness or an awareness about truma that would maintain that tefillah to be in effect. Whereas Beit Hillel omrim eina tzricha tefillah b'achrona. She does not require a tefillah. Rashi over here qualifies that statement and says, that's true, she does not need a tefillah for truma, but she does need a tefillah for kodoshim. That means on day 81 or day 41, she brings her korbanot that will permit her to eat kodoshim or to enter in the mikdash. She will have to go to the mikveh before she does that. And that is a takanat chachamim, because of the fact, again, that she's been so far away from kodoshim for so long that she has to do a new mikveh to remind herself, to make her aware and bring it to the forefront of her consciousness that she's now going to be in the world of kodesh, and to pay attention or to remind her of the fact maybe she did become tameh. Maybe she needs to pay attention or remember something that happened. Never will ever go to the mikveh. So that Beit Hillel will agree with regards to Kodeshim. They just disagree with Truma the night before that you don't need a mikveh, and Beit Shammai does. Now Gemara says, Damar mar, tabal v'ala, ochel b'maser. Because we have a statement, and that's why the Mishnah says the same thing, that a person can go to the mikveh, come out of the mikveh, he's a tvul yom, he can eat maser, because maser is chulin. So therefore he's permitted to eat it. Because la chala, how does that work? Chulin at tvulim l'chala, lav kechala damu. It must be that chulin that need challah to be taken off of them don't have a status of challah. Because if they had a status of challah, then this woman couldn't work with the dough because she's a sheni the tuma. Challah is like truma and can accept the shlishi the tuma. If you had something that's tevel lechallah, that meaning that it still needs challah to be taken off of it, if that was classified as challah, that would be tmeah at this point because she's a sheni and that would make it into a shlishi. It wouldn't work. So it must be the chulin at tvulin lechallah. chulin that require chala to be taken off of it, lav kechala damu, do not have a status of chala, at least for a full yom, according to the Balei HaTosafot. And that's why she can do this whole process of separating away the chala before she calls it chala, and it won't be problematic. Uma kefet, she has to make them adjacent. Damamar, mitzvah litrom min hamukaf. There is a mitzvah to take off shuma from things that are present in front of you, adjacent to each other. And that's why she takes the kli and puts it right next to the dough, so that the challah that she's separating away is adjacent to the dough itself. Many give reasons for that as being the fact that we want to know for certain that the item that you're taking truma off of or meiser off of is still extant. There's a possibility that what you're taking truma for or meiser for was stolen, rotted, something went wrong, was traded, it's not there anymore. So if we require that it's mina mukaf, that it's there and present in front of you, then you'll know that it's there for certain. You know you're taking off truma or maaser. Or vice versa, we want all the items there so people who live in the household know that what you're separating away is now truma and maaser, because the item that was tevo, that's kulin now, was left behind. And when you have them together, they understand that there are these distinctions that exist. So that's how some explain the requirement for mina mukaf. Although the truth is that it probably is a gzera takatuf, the pasuk makes the statement that et mikdashom mimenu, that you want to take away the hekdesh, that which is kodesh, mimenu, from that which is there. That et mikdashom mimenu is a idea that you have to have the two of them next to each other or present in order for it to work. And that might be a gzera takatuf. Although again, if you do it shalomina mukaf, even though it's problematic, it still is effective. And you will have trumar, you will have maaser, even if you do it shalom mina mukaf, even though lechatkila we'd prefer if you do it mina mukaf, or even maybe it's required mina Torah. Bekora la shem, she calls it chaladen, sakadat kamina nigzor dumata the min gobo mevrai, kamashmalan, that it's okay. So what's the problem here? The problem is that possibly she might touch that dough after she calls it chala that's in the kli, she might come into direct contact with it. If she does that, she ruins that chala and becomes chalat mea. So you could have thought maybe we wouldn't let her do all of this procedure because she might come to touch the chala that's in the kli. The kamash malan is, we don't worry about that. That chala that she puts into the kli, we assume because of the whole procedure she went through and she knows she's tmeya, that she will only hold it through the kli and not directly, and therefore we don't worry about it. If some of her saliva falls on a kikar shel truma, that's not. Mashke tvul yom, those liquids that are discharged by a tvul yom, is similar to liquids which they come into contact with. And neither of them are mitameh, because the tvoyom is a sheni the tuma. Any liquid they come into contact with of chulin is not affected by sheni the tuma. So there's no tuma in that liquid. Not if they come into contact with it, not if they discharge it. And for that reason, the Rabbeinu Tam actually explains that we're talking about a mashke truma hanogeya behem. It's a mashke truma that came into contact with them, that elu ein mitamim et kodeshim, aval mispseo paslile, they will not be mitameh kodeshim, but they will get pasol, but truma, afilu enu poselet. By truma, it's not even posel, because these mashkim that came into contact with it are a shlishid tuma, and therefore they have no more tuma to pass on to truma. And that's why the kikar remains tahor over here. Chutz. The exception of the mashkezav, which has a different level of tuma, which we already discussed earlier in the Masechta, that liquids discharged by a zav, a zava, a nida, if they are items that are mitagel v'yotzei, they pool first, they go out, and chozer lebriato, and they can be reabsorbed into the body, those are the qualifications we saw, then those liquids have the same status as the zav, zava, nida, and they're in ava tuma. That's an unusual or the exception to the rule with regards to liquids. Otherwise, liquids that come from the tamei are equivalent to the liquids as if the tamei touched them. And since over here, the end of the line in chulin is sheni l'tuma, these liquids are not affected by a tvul yom. With regards to takanat chachamim, the chachamim were mitakein that any liquid that is touched by someone that is a sheni l'tuma, except for a tvul yom, makes it into a rishon, switches it letchila, because of the problem of the ease with which liquids become tamei, therefore they would go there about these liquids, and they also go there that those liquids affect the kli to make it tamei, even though a rishon the tumah generally does not make a kli tamei, because of the liquids of a Zav and other individuals who have a high level of Tumah, Vava Tumah, which can be Mitamei Kelim. So they had these two institutions with regards to Mashkim because of the ease of Tumah that is associated with Mashkim, plus the high level of Tumah that exists in certain Mashkim. Beit Shammai says that you have to go to the mikvah after the sunset on the 80th day. My Beinayu, what's the difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Rav Katina, Tvo Yom Aruch, Ikamenayu. That's exactly what we discussed. Tvo Yom Aruch, does the tefillah that she did back on the night after the 14th or 7th count enough so that when the sun sets on the 80th or the 40th day that she is Torah? Or do you need a new tefillah? And the question as Rashi raised it was that you have a possibility of a Hesech Hadat in between. Right now we'll start the next Mishnah, which is a topic that we again addressed earlier in the Masechta back on Daf Nun Dalet, but we'll then continue through tomorrow's Daf, which is the problem of a sighting of a woman during a Yemei Ziva at the tail end of a Yemei Ziva. What happens if a woman has a sighting of Dam on the 11th day of her Yemei Ziva or the 10th day of her Yemei Ziva? How do we deal with that? What do we need in terms of Shomer Yom Keneged Yom? And what are the possibilities of this woman becoming Tmei'ah? So now we have a Ru'ah, Yom Echadasar, woman who sees on the 11th day of her Yemei Ziva, V'tavla La'erev. And instead of waiting until the next day, which we would normally do in a Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, she goes to the mikveh immediately that night, after the 11th day when she had a sighting, she goes to the mikveh that night. U'mishamsham. And she was together with her husband. She shouldn't be doing this, but she did do this. Beit Shammai Omer, mitamim mishkav u'moshav v'chayvin kurban. Beit Shammai says she's a full-fledged nida, therefore her husband is a boel nida. They'll have to bring korbanot because of boel nida, and they'll have tumah, like a boel nida. Mishkav, moshav, all the full tumult will be associated with her, because she's classified as a full-fledged nida. You need to be shomer yom, keneged yom, even with the sighting on the 11th day of your Yemei Ziva. Beitel omrim, k'turim min ha-karban. There is no korban over here, because when you have a sighting on your 11th day, you do not need to be shomer yom, keneged yom. So therefore, in terms of korban, there's no korban over here, because it's not a nida. Now, in terms of tumah, as Rashi notes over here, Beit Hillel believes that there is tumah over here, and that's because they were machmir egzera, yom yud aleph, atu other yemei ziva. On every other of the yemei ziva, if she had a sighting, she'd have to wait until the next day to go to the mikveh, and she'd have to be shomer yom keneged yom. This happens to be an oddity because it's the 11th day, and there's no day to be shomer yom keneged yom. Therefore, she is tohorah right away, technically, if she goes to the mikveh. We dissuade her from doing that because we don't want her to mix up the 11th day with any of the other days of Yemei Ziva. So we dissuade her. But that means that's only a rabbinic institution, not Doraita. And therefore, if they were together, Mishamsha, there is no Korban because there's no violation Doraita. But there is Tumah because the Chamim instituted that as a protection against a woman thinking that she doesn't have to be Shomer Yom Keneged Yom. Tavla B'Yom Shalacharav. Instead of going to the mikveh on the night after the 11th day, when she had a sighting on the 11th day, she goes on the 12th day, which is already post for Yemei Ziva. She goes to the mikveh that morning, v'shimshat beita, and then is together with her husband before the sun sets on the 12th day. V'achar kach rata. And after that, she has a sighting of dam. Beit Shammai omrim mitamim mishkav u'moshav u'ptorim min ha-kurban. Beit Shammai says she has tumat nida, but she is p'turah min ha-kurban. Now, she's p'turah min ha-kurban because even Beit Shammai at this point agrees that you have mikzat hayom kukulo because you're ready on the 12th day. She went to the mikveh. She is tohorah, at least from that point forward, prospectively, she is tohorah. And therefore, when she was together with her husband, she was tohorah midoraita at that point in time. And she was permitted to be together with her husband, even though we would dissuade that because of the problems that could arise. Nevertheless, she was permitted midoraita to be together with her husband. There were no korban, but Beit Shammai says we're going to keep tumah here because the sighting that she has later in the day, we connect with the sighting that she had yesterday and we make it as if the tumah was continuous and therefore she will be mitamei bo'ala, she will be tmeya, and so will bo'ala be tmeya because they were gozer midrabanan atu toch yud alef yom. Because of the same problem, had it happened during the middle of your Yud Aleph Yemei Ziva, then you would have a real problem over here. If she had a sighting now, that would retroactively undermine the mikveh she did in the morning, and she would be Tmeya straight through. This happens not to be the case because it's already post the 11 days of Yemei Zivah. It's on the 12th day. And so on the 12th day, her sighting of Dam is a Tchilat Nida. It has no connection to the Dam Zivah she's on the previous day. But it was in the middle of the 11 days of Yemei Zivah. She had a sighting of Dam after she went to Mikveh. It would connect back with the day before and make her do a Zavah Tana of 2 days. Or if it was 3 days, it would make her do a Zavah Gedola. Therefore, Beit Shammai will go there. Beit Hillel and Reim are Zeh Gargaran. They don't define what they're saying. They're saying that this individual is a glutton. The man should not have been together with his wife then. It was improper to do such. But it sounds like from this that, number one, of course, there's no korban, because Doraita, according to Beit Hillel, even the night before, she was muteret the balam mi Doraita. And in addition to that, it sounds like there is no tuma over here, because they were not gozer otu yimei ziba. Modim, they both agree, biro'a betoch yudalef yom. She had a sighting of Dam during the middle of her 11 days. And she went to the mikvah the night after her sighting, the Shimsha, and was together with her husband improperly. Here, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai agree that if it's in the middle of Yemei Zivah, she went to the mikvah at night, she's clearly not tahor. She's still in Nida Midoraita, Zavak Tana Midoraita. That's the case. Her husband means to wear together with her as a bol Nida, their Chayav Korban, and she was Tmeyah, because the mikvah did absolutely nothing for her. Tavlava Yom Shacharav. If she waited until the next morning, went to the mikveh, and had mitzvah de yom kukulo of shomer yom keneg yom, went to the mikveh, that is effective to make her tohora. Vishimsha, and she was together with her husband. Technically, midoraita, that's fine, but harizo torbut ra'a. That is a bad practice. That is something that is not going to end well, because of the fact that if she sees after they were together, that retroactively undermines her going to the mikveh and makes her into a zavak tana for 2 days, or if it's the third day, make her into a zavak gedola. And therefore, we would discourage her to be together with her husband, her husband together with her, because of these risks. And that's why it's tarbut ra. Even if she doesn't cite dam afterwards, it's still tarbut ra because of the risk that you enter into. Because if she does cite dam, then there will be a problem and you have to bring a korban for boel nida, and boel nida will be tameh. Umagan bilatan tluin. And again, their touch and their bila is waiting to see if she has a sighting later in the day. If she has a sighting, it'll undermine everything. It'll be problematic. If she doesn't have a sighting, they will be tohorim. But obviously, it's a bad choice because you're taking a huge risk—a risk midoraita that she might be tmeah retroactively, and that would undermine the whole tefila, and then you'd be bol nida and bitameh bol nida, and that is problematic and a risk that we don't want to undertake. There is a large Tosafot over here that speaks about a sheet of Rashi that's found in a number of places in Shas. Rashi seems to indicate that you can have mikvah dayom kukulo with regards to nighttime. And Tosafot says, our Mishnah makes it clear that mikvah dayom kukulo doesn't work at night. Because that here, by a case of Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, when she has a sighting in the middle of Yemei Zivah, we say that if she goes to the mikvah at night, it doesn't work. If you believe mikvah dayom kukulo works at night, then she's already Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, a part of her day, and you go to the mikveh, she should be Tehora, Midoraita at least. The fact that we wait until the next day before declaring her Tehora Midoraita shows you that Mikvah Yom Kikulo only applies during the daytime, does not apply at night. And Rashi says this in the Gemara Pesachim in the view of Rabbi Yossi, because of the fact that Mikvah Yom is Kikulo even at night, that the only way for a woman to become a Zavak Dola and having a sighting 3 days in a row is only when she has a continuous flow of Dam all the way through the 3 days. And then obviously our Mishnah, according to Rashi, is not like Rabbi Yossi in the Gemara Pesachim. The Rabbeinu Tam is adamant that even according to Rabbi Yossi, you cannot have Mikvah Dayom Kukulo even at night. And therefore he goes on to explain the Gemara Pesachim in a different manner in order to reconcile Rabbi Yossi's position in Pesachim, which seems to require a continuous flow of Dam, with our mission over here, which seems to indicate that Mikvah Yom Kukulo only applies in the morning. This obviously has nafkamino for things like Avelut, where you have the seventh day of Avelut, where you say Mikvah Yom Kukulo, that's not at the night of the seventh day of Avelut, that's only after Amud HaShachar, after Netzach Chama, on the seventh day, do you have Mikvah Yom Kukulo, where you can then terminate the Avelut. Tosafot over here is making that point, that our mission is clearly against that view of Rashi, and that here it's evidence of the fact that Mikvah Yom Kukulo only has application during the day, does not have application at night. All right, we're going to stop over here by the Gemara on the top of Ayin Bet Amud Aleph.